We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, June 11 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming at you hot on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. For the next 2 hours and 35 minutes, we got you from right here inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Get the baseball out of your system. Forget about the NBA. There's only one or two games left anyway. Football season officially begins today. I told you yesterday this is how we play it. You had one day, only the lonely, to look back, bitch and moan on LSU baseball. Get it out of your system. Will we still talk Astros? Sure. Keep you abreast of the College World Series, if you want. Let you know what happens north of the border, by the bay, with the NBA Finals? I guess so. But today is when we kick off Football Talk 2019. Want to have you involved. I'm going in right to the deep end. LSU, Saints, UL, in our opening segment. You want to play along? Feel free. 706-0111. We'll begin with the Saints because there's news there. Cam Jordan signs a 3-year extension with the Saints today, worth $52 million. It'll lock him down for the next 5 seasons through the 2023 campaign. Love it. And during all of the draft influx of talent that you've seen come through New Orleans, that Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, during all the assets that they've accumulated in free agency, through it all, they're still taking care of who brought them to the dance. It's been time and again Drew Brees, even though he's willing to kick the can down the road financially a little bit and give a bit of a hometown deal. Today it's Cam Jordan. You've got your bedrocks on both sides of the football. I love this. And so suddenly you've got someone who can continue to mentor Marcus Davenport. He can help bring along a defensive line that could be one of the league's best when healthy. Sheldon Rankins won't be available in the immediacy, but Malcolm Brown will after coming over from New England. Mario Edwards will. And so this Saints defensive line had one of the best in the business. They already knew that. Now he's being paid that way. Now he's got some term behind him. He ain't going anywhere. And he might just be a Saint for life. And how beautiful of a thing that is. I'll use that to piggyback off of where the Saints were and where they could go. 13-3, we know, a year ago, destroyed the field in the NFC South and came up painfully short in overtime at home in the NFC title game. Hashtag asterisks. They had 8 Pro Bowlers last year, New Orleans. 8. Every single one of them, with the exception of Max Unger, is back this year. Some other notes that I've got on this season, where it's going to hinge, how it could be in the balance. AK-41, is he ready to make the ascension to be a lead back and one of the league's best? I think we understand catching the football. He's already probably the best in the business doing that, that technically registers as a running back. Although we know you could put Kamara in the slot whenever you want. But can he take that next step forward? Because I'm not ready to give that much of a vote of confidence yet in Latavius Murray. I'm not. He won't be what Mark Ingram was. If he could be 80% of that and stay healthy, that'll probably be enough. But my gut tells me more will be asked of Kamara this year. And last year, we saw 4 games without Ingram. He was pretty darn good without a thumper. But if he doesn't have that compliment, he's probably not all that he can be. What's he doing in this offseason to get ready to shoulder that load? I'm excited to find out. Come August, and then obviously through October, into December, and you hope January. But can Kamara take that next step forward? Then there's Jared Cook. And what's he going to mean for this Saints offense? Because we learned today, Cam Meredith not participating in Saints minicamp, reportedly. He was coming along well, but now likely on the outside looking in when it comes to making the 53-man roster. Disappointing signing coming out of the Chicago Bears a few years ago. And so you better hope that Jared Cook is ready to roll. You better hope that Tre'Quan Smith is ready to make his year two jump. And so some of these other guys that aren't Michael Thomas, I mentioned 8 Pro Bowlers last year, Mike Thomas, the only Saint who's a first-team All-Pro. And some of the other receiving options will have to take a step forward. And then, of course, sticking with the offense, are they ready to turn it over to Mac immediately at center? They went out and got a youngster. He was really good. Playing at the collegiate level, can he take over and start from game one? I've said it before on this program, and I'll say it again. If it's not him, the Saints are in trouble. Doesn't need to be Cameron Tom. Doesn't need to be Will Clapp. Doesn't need to be Nick Easton. Doesn't need to be any of those guys. The most talented one is the one they went and drafted in the second round. Finally, I'll go one on the defensive side, and I've already said his name once, Malcolm Brown. He might just be the biggest addition the Saints made this offseason, my opinion. That includes Cook. That includes the draft picks. And I like some of those guys they got, especially the kid from Florida in the secondary. But there's a chance that a 25-year-old run stuffer who was really good last season for New England might just be somebody that could be the equivalent to Demario Davis in terms of an offseason addition that came over from the AFC. I'm pretty excited to see what he means for this Saints defense. I'll go to LSU. Yeah, we're kicking off football. We'll touch all three bases. Saints, LSU, UL. Tigers, 10-3 last year. A Fiesta Bowl win. Finished top 10 in the country. Probably a year ahead of schedule. But this was always supposed to be the year. And you'll recall, we said this during the transition from Miles into Ogeron interim, then interim, excuse me, full-time. We always thought this was probably the year LSU was building toward. They'll have a quarterback that returns with his offensive coordinator. That continuity hasn't been seen in a decade in Baton Rouge. And yet, I'll tell you that Joe Brady might just end up as the straw that stirs the drink and really changes things for the better with this offense. A couple of players that I'm pretty excited to see. I won't call them underrated, but I think you're about to watch Ja'Marr Chase offensively, Jacob Phillips defensively, make a climb toward being among the conference's best at their position. I think they've got that type of potential. And the offensive line for LSU looking pretty strong. Bringing Ed Ingram back to the fold. Just about everybody else returning, minus Garrett Brumfield. They've got the chance to be a group that wins another game than they did a year ago in the regular season. Some people think maybe two. We'll find out. 11-1 would be awfully special. 10-2. With the chance for more, would be very impressive for me. And we'll end with the Raging Cajuns. 7-7 a year ago, they got to 7-5. Lost the conference title game to App State on the road. Lost the Cure Bowl to Tulane. And so what do we know this year? The schedule's not exactly forgiving. Starting off at, or excuse me, versus Mississippi State. And that's a game, well, without a home team. In New Orleans, 11 a.m. Saturday. Can things get weird early on a Labor Day Saturday? Billy Napier and the Cages are hoping so. Pivotal stretch, couple straight midweek games. Wednesday, October the 9th versus App State. 8 days later, Thursday, October 17th at Arkansas State. What do you do against, presumably, one of the best in the Eastern Division and your year-in, year-out rival in the Sun Belt West? Couple of storylines, defense. We hear it's going to be the most improved unit on the team. Napier's told us that on this show. Let's see it. Let's watch that under Ron Roberts. How will they pay dividends? Who are some of these youngsters that will step up and make this a better defensive unit? And finally, is Levi Lewis the real deal? Is he more than just the best they've got? Can he be one of the best in the Sun Belt? I know. We're not even technically to the middle of June, but I'm ready for football. I think you can tell. And I haven't even scratched the surface of these three programs and franchises. Haven't even dabbled in high school football talk, but from here all the way up until Labor Day weekend, time to get our minds right, baby. We got football that's coming, and I promise you I'm ready for it. Ready for our guest as well today, Sharif Ishak, coming aboard in our next segment. We'll get his reaction to Cam Jordan's extension and what's next for the Saints in this offseason. A double dose of Shay Dixon, 5 until 5:30. So much happening on the recruiting front. We'll get him to update it. And if a player in the modern era can really do football basketball as a collegiate combo, LSU took a commit from one within the last 96 hours. We'll ask Shay that question at 5 o'clock. Robin Fambro talking high school football and the latest from the LHSAA Executive Committee meeting. She'll be with us at 6:15. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Coming right back, talking Saints with Sharif Ishak on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Time to go find our resident big timer. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Quickly, aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, he's waiting patiently. Sharif Ishak, WDSU-TV in New Orleans, ready to talk some Saints and Cam Jordan. How are you, Sharif?
Good, Ben. I wouldn't consider myself, you know, a big timer, but if in your eyes I'm a big timer, then I'll take it.
What's understood probably doesn't need to be explained. I will ask you about Cam Jordan first. $52 million extension, 3 years. Think the odds are pretty good he never plays it down for any other team?
Yeah, he's a New Orleanian. I know he's from Arizona, played on the West Coast, but the dude's a New Orleanian. He said it multiple times. He just wants to be here, finish his career here, wants to chase Ricky Jackson's sack record. So I'd say so. I'd say his time will end here in New Orleans. He's a 2011 first-round pick, 29 years old, if I'm doing my math correctly, 28, 29. So, yeah, he's probably got like 5-6 more years to play.
He will be 30 next month, so you're in the same ballpark. I'll ask you this. How important does it seem when you observe Cam Jordan, how important is it to him to mentor the next wave of D linemen, specifically at this point, Marcus Davenport?
Well, you hit it on the head when you say mentor, because he's a leader. He's one of the voices in that locker room, although he jokes a lot, and it's a good thing. It's his personality, I guess. Some people, whenever you get an interview from him, can't get a straight answer without him like straying off, but it's good. It's good for him to be around the future, you know, just first off just from a season. But what I think is going to have a better sophomore season if he's healthy, because it looked like he was on the verge of playing, you know, really well, and then he hurt himself against the Vikings, a game that his best game of the season. But yeah, I think him, opposite side of Cam. Cam's going to teach him a lot more. You know, talking about a vet, been in the league since 2011, continues to get better each season, and I think that will be the progression of Marcus Davenport as he sits behind, listens to Cam, watches Cam. So, yeah, it's big time for that reason. That would be one of the reasons that, you know, him staying around would be great.
Sharif Ishak, WDSU in New Orleans, our guest. Something else that came out of a mini-camp presser today, Sean Payton said, with Cam Jordan taken care of, Mike Thomas is likely next in line for an extension. Thomas currently in the final year of his rookie deal. You think this one gets done before the season?
I think it gets done right around, I'd say before training camp. I'd take that guess. He'd, you know, get the $18 to $20 million a year. That's probably about what, you know, going rate for a receiver like Michael Thomas is. I'd be, you know, top three receiver in the NFL, but he needs to play paid like a top three receiver. So, yeah, I could see him getting his $18 million at least. So I think this franchise has been pretty good at avoiding distractions. They don't want that lingering into the season. They don't want him, you know, thinking about the off season and maybe holding out. They'll get that taken care of. That's probably what happened today with Cam Jordan. It's probably a great sign for Michael Thomas. They, you know, try to get these things done quickly and before training camp or the season starts, so they can avoid all the distractions.
Play the projection game for me here, Sharif. The target that becomes more reliable for Drew Brees this season, outside of Michael Thomas, do you think it's Tre'Quan Smith, second year at receiver, or the new tight end, Jared Cook?
It's no-brainer. It's Jared Cook. You know, I should have probably not said that. I should have just said, you know, Traquan Smith, because I'm sure Jared Cook and Michael Thomas are going to see a lot more tough coverage, which should open Traquan Smith and make him, you know, a bigger threat. I mean, that's probably a way you can look at it. But I still think Jared Cook in the seam, because he's like a, I feel like he's a tweener. He's a receiver tight end. He's that athletic and that good to play on the line anywhere. He could play tight, he could play wide, he could play in the slot. So I just think those two guys are going to be able to open it up for Traquan Smith, which is a great thing. You need multiple receivers on that team. You can't just have Michael Thomas. So I think this signing is going to help other guys as well. That could be Keith Kirkwood getting some more touches and being a bigger part of the offense. You can't forget about Ted Ginn. That's one thing when we talked to Ted Ginn last week for the last OTA, someone asked him, hey, were you happy that they didn't sign the receiver, that they didn't bring a receiver in? And I understand that Jared Cook's technically a tight end. He said, yeah, that just goes to show you that they have trust in us. They trust in what the receivers are doing. And, you know, it's hard to second guess what Sean Payton thinks when it comes to the offense, but you got to assume with a healthy group of receivers and Jared Cook, there it is. I mean, you have the guys there, and there should be no excuses.
Sharif, sell me on the fact that the Saints have a worthy backup, even if it's a couple of people for Mark Ingram. I'm not sure that I could see Alvin Kamara handling that load by himself, and I'm sure they're not going to ask him to, but sell me that the next guys in line can fill those shoes Ingram left.
I mean, Latavius Murray, I think, is going to be solid. I think he's going to be really good. That's one thing the Saints are really good at evaluating is running backs. If they brought him in, they must know there's something special. He's a big dude. He's 6'3", 230. I mean, they haven't had a running back that big. And he could take the pounding. That's what I think they're bringing him in for, someone who could take the pounding, because I think Kamara's taken a lot of pounding over the last few years. You want to see how he develops in the passing game. I think he has pretty decent hands. Doesn't have a receiving touchdown, but I still think he has good hands. He'd come out of the backfield, but you need somebody within that, you know, 7 yards from the goal line who could pound it in. You don't have to rely on 41 doing it all. But I do really, truly like Latavius Murray 1-2 punch with Alvin Kamara. That's going to be thunder lightning again. And just a little bit more boom with a big dude like Latavius Murray.
Talking Saints football with Sharif Ishak on 103.7 The Game. Defensively, I don't know that they had a single addition that'll be as big as Demario Davis the year prior, but what do you like for what they've brought into that group?
I think that a lot of people are going to sleep on the Mario Edwards Jr. signing, because he's a guy who could play outside, you know, defensive tackle, three technique. That's a sleeper type of play. You need somebody who can move around along the line. I like that signing. I mean, Malcolm Brown is just your big defensive tackle that can stop the run. He doesn't have many sacks. I think he has 8.5 sacks in his 4 years with the Patriots. That's not what he's there to do. I mean, he's a first and second down specialist. Mario Edwards Jr., he can do it on every single down. I just think he hasn't had enough snaps, but I do like those two signings because they need to bring other guys in with Sheldon Rankin's hurt. You need somebody who can stuff the run. You need somebody who can go in there and get the quarterback. I think they got two good, very young players until Sheldon gets back. And when Sheldon gets back, watch out, because you still don't know what Marcus Davenport can do, and I still continue to say that Davenport, when healthy, will have a better year. So I know that's an unknown, but I think they're going to be in a good spot with those two signings they had during the offseason along the defensive line. They're good in the secondary. I know they're bringing in guys like Webster, and they've been signing some other guys, but if you can, hey, get better in the secondary by bringing some other guys in, why not? You're already ascending. Why not keep doing it? Do what you've been doing best over the last two or three off seasons, and I think that's what Dennis Allen and Sean Payton are doing, Aaron Glenn. So I think they're in a good spot. They just need to have that one other pass rusher. We'll see if that, you know, develops into Davenport or Edwards Jr. alongside of Cam.
Anything other than a potential signing and extension of Michael Thomas that could happen between now and training camp that you got your eyes on?
You know, training camp is fun, man. The fun thing about it is just stepping away from either the usual suspects. You know, you want to see like a guy like, you know, Akeem Ellis, a seventh round pick, a linebacker from Idaho, really, really nice guy. How do they use him? He's a jack of all trades. He's essentially Taysom Hill on defense. But the dude has played every single position when he was in Idaho, so he could do it all. Interesting to see how they, you know, eventually, whenever they get the pads on, and how they use him. And They're trying out Tristan Blewett from the Nola Gold. His first day was today. He was returning punts. You know, maybe they slide him in, let him play a little safety over the next few days. You want to see if he can actually make it to training camp. You know, it's those fun stories like that. Cyril Grayson, the track star from LSU, played at Rumble. You try to look at small things like that. Somebody sneaky is going to make the team. I mean, Taylor Stallworth made the team, the defensive tackle. You can't forget about him. He's still on the team when you talk defensive line. So you kind of look for, you know, those little sexy stories away from the usual suspects. The usual suspects, you know what you're going to get with them. It's always fun when you get to the first, like, second week of a training camp. The first Tristan Blewett are on the team, the Caden Ellers. You want to see your other rookies, like Saquon Hampton. Does he develop even more as the training camp goes on? They got to, you know, if they hit on those guys like Saquon Hampton, Caden Ellis, that's just an extra incentive. Alizé Mack, another tight end. You know, Caden mentioned today, takes a couple steps forward, may take a step back, but that comes with a late-round pick. He has the potential there. So those are the stories you try to watch. I stay away from the big names because you know what you're going to get there.
Always love to go deep with our guest, Sharif Ishak. Sharif, it's good to do this, man. Here we are in almost smack dab in the middle of June. We're talking Saints football. Nothing wrong with that.
No, man. Giving us something to cover, gives us something to talk about. I know after the last few seasons, fans in the entire state want to see them just, you know, third time the charm. They want to see them go to Miami this time, 10-year anniversary, and get it done again.
People got some good vibes off that one. Sharif, thanks for bringing that up. We'll do it again soon.
Sure, man. No problem.
10-year anniversary in Miami. I hadn't even thought of that yet. Good on Sharif. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls. I'm excited for today's sink or swim question. We're all in on football. You will be too. I know it. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Coming right back on 103.7 The Game.
Football season can't come fast enough.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
Luckily, you have Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love to help get you by.
Go 34. Here we go. Now, 35 minutes after 4 o'clock. You can hear me. I can hear you. We don't have to reenact a Verizon commercial. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Sharif Ishak trying to shut down our microphones here. But we come back, and we have a question to offer. I always think along these lines when it gets to this time of year. I did it when I was at Tiger Rag Magazine. Look ahead. Figure out who's next. And it's kind of like Sharif said. You know who's good. You don't need to spend a lot of time with Breeze, with Cam Jordan, with Demario Davis. Same thing on the LSU side. I don't have to see a ton of Joe Burrow, although he'll be the most photographed and videoed player, I would imagine, this August at fall camp. Don't need to spend a ton of time either with Jacob Phillips. He's an out-and-out stud. Grant Delpit, ditto. But I'm always looking for who is next. And so at this time of year, what better conversation to have? I'll get to it as soon as we play the music.
Love, exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day on this football kickoff edition of B2BS. Which up-and-coming player are you most excited about this season for LSU football? Do yourself one big favor. Don't overthink it. Just somebody who's not a star that you're excited about. Somebody who hasn't played that you know is going to. Somebody that has but is about to carve out a bigger role. Just someone you think, freshman, guy who hasn't seen enough time yet, but his time is coming. Who are you most excited about? Call us. Let us know. 706-0111. CD, give me one or two to begin.
I think it's almost too easy to bring up Derek Stingley Jr. I think it's a guy that we can just almost leave off the board altogether because everybody, the expectations for him are almost too high. So I'm going to go with Trey Palmer out of Kentwood High School. And it's more because of the fact that I feel like he's going to be an integral part of this team's hopefully new look offense that we've been banting about for weeks.
Maybe. But I think that's one of the most difficult positions receiver to crack on the team with depth right now. I think there's a reason that Jonathan Giles hit the transfer portal. Trey Palmer's a special talent. I got to see him finish off his high school career in the Dome. I'll give you a redshirt freshman along the defensive line, Jarrell Cherry. And these are the type of guys I always like to identify. Who could help the cause that hasn't been called upon yet? Cherry, by all accounts, had a massively productive spring. He's tacked on some bulk to his frame. He came in with a lot in the way of expectation, and he's not going to be asked to do everything as an edge rusher, right? Because we know some of the usual suspects that are coming back. Even Kalevon Chaisaw that's returning from injury. I'm going to point out Jarrell Cherry as somebody who's got a really big opportunity ahead of him, and I could see him climbing up the depth charts. And I'll give you another on the offensive side. Again, these are the type of guys I like trying to identify. Racy McMath, we know who he is. Came in as a receiver, can play some tight end. He is freakishly big. And while Stephon Sullivan's your leader in the clubhouse to be the starting tight end to replace Foster Morrow, I think McMath is one of the biggest matchup headaches on this team. So look for Jamar Chase, Terrace Marshall, Justin Jefferson to be the top three receivers. And I think they'll be pretty unassailable. I don't think you're touching those three. After that, out of all the big weapons they've got, all the big-bodied receivers, I think that Racy McMath is somebody that the SEC might not be quite ready for if he continues along his progression. All right, let's get out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Chase, you've got some of our submissions. How about yours?
Mine's got to be the new defensive tackle coming in. Ika, is that right? He's got, like, what, six letters in his first
Siaki
and last name?
Siaki Ika. I'm told he goes by Apu. So you're a fan of Apu?
Yes, the way he exploded off the ball. The kid's going to be something special, defensive tackle this year. He's going to – you're going to see his number out there.
I completely agree.
Thanks, man.
No, you got it, Chase. No, there's no doubt about it. Apu Ika is going to play football this year. And with the new rules – relaxing the red shirt, the question's going to be, do they catch lightning in a bottle with somebody like Ika while he gets burned in those first four games, and then he becomes, to Chase's point, an integral part of what they're doing, platooning for the rest of the season. Let's get some more. It's early. It's fun to take some flyers on some of the young guys, the inexperienced guys. Call us. Let us know. 706-0111. It's funny, CD, but I did write down Derek Stingley Jr.'s name, but only under the premise that I'm talking about as a punt returner, because I'm with you. It's cheating. It's way too easy to just throw out Stingley and say, I'm excited to see what he can do at corner. Yeah, the free world is, and he's a pretty known entity there. But I think you're going to see him do some things as a punt returner that are pretty special as well. So in that realm, I'm okay with mentioning his name. Because LSU hasn't had that devastating punt return threat maybe since Tyrann Mathieu. They've kind of gotten by at that position. Wouldn't it be fun to see them excel there? And this is the only opportunity moving forward, so we would think, for Stingley to touch the football. The dude could have absolutely been all-state wide receiver if that's all he did at Dunham. And so the football in his hands as a punt returner, oh yeah, you can put a hook in my mouth, I will bite. Let's get back to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Mike, give me an up-and-comer.
Like to see what Thaddeus Moss can be able to do with his dad being Randy Moss and everything.
You know, they got a number of kids at tight end that haven't had a chance yet, buried by Foster Morrow. That's a really good one, though. And they're excited about him coming over from NC State. Appreciate the dial, Mike. We got time for some more. 706-0111. So far, Chase has called in, and he's given us a freshman on the D-line. Mike's given a guy who's paid his dues and I think was injured for a good chunk of last season as a tight end. What you want to add to that?
I like that Thaddeus Moss pick a lot. It's largely because of the fact we just don't know what we're going to wind up getting out of him. Because, mind you, we didn't get any film on him last year with LSU. And, again, it's a lot of what I was talking about with my pick in Trey Palmer. It's the fact that this new-look offense could wind up having the passing game have an extra emphasis. Sure, you're going to wind up having a lot more of your run game still in there. But I think you wind up seeing a guy like Thaddeus Moss thrive in that as opposed to, say, like, the way the offense used to be where the tight ends weren't necessarily a part of the passing game.
Could be. Again, I think they've got three guys at the receiver position that they're going to just pepper the football to. Ditto with backside of the backfield. First up at tight ends, going to have an interesting opportunity. I just don't know if Moss will be that guy. I'm not even sure that McMath, who I handed out, will be that guy. But that's what we're doing right now. We're taking some flyers, and a lot of that, inherently, is based off of potential. I'll give one more. No, scratch that. We're going to take a call because I don't want to steal thunder. And if Chad possibly had my guy, I'm not cutting him at the knees. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Chad, it's your turn.
Man, it's I have three, man. The one most obvious man, which I don't think is that obvious, is Chassaw. I want to see when he comes back and looks back from injury. He hadn't put no pads on for, man, almost a year. I think in spring ball he'd even suit up. I think he's the biggest name. But he really hasn't done anything yet. I mean, he got hurt in the Miami game. So I want to see what he does. The incoming freshman running back, obviously. And me and you, Ben, you touched on it, Ben, early. I think McMath, the receiver slash tight end, is going to be huge, man. And, hey, Ben, one more thing before I hang up. Did you last guess say the Saints running back that's coming in for Ingram is 6'3", 230? That's a monster, bro. Thanks. Later, man.
He is, and that is what he said. Good ears, Chad. Latavius Murray is a monster. He is huge. He was with Minnesota most recently. He's been with Oakland. He's a big back. I don't agree with Sharif that he's going to be much of a presence in the passing game, but he's absolutely your thumper. I think that Ingram is a more versatile back that could probably find the hole a little better. My remembrance watching Latavius Murray, having him on a fantasy team one year, he runs a little bit more upright, he's a little bit more stiff, but he can absolutely, from a physical standpoint, take the pounding that they're going to ask. I like the submissions from Chad, and if you're sleeping on the return of Kalyvon Chaisson, I wouldn't. That's just my suggestion. All right, back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Keith, give me an up-and-comer. Hey, more than one if you'd like.
Yeah, I'll give you two. My first, I'm going to say is a guy I think Ed Ogeron, they're going to be forced to make him the RB1, and that's Chris Curry. And I got a comparison to Spencer Ware.
Ooh.
I think the kid is going to bring some juice. He's going to bring some dump to an offense that lacked it last year, and he's going to pave the way for the young guys to kind of smooth their way into the transition of the college level.
If baby guy, beast mode can be a little bit of what Spencer Ware was during his time at LSU, that would be a much needed addition.
Yeah, and I think that'd be a perfect comparison. That next guy, I think, Racy McMath, I'm going out the road, y'all. He's too big, too physical of an athlete, too versatile in the eyes of an offensive coordinator to not find a position for him. So I'm rolling with those two guys.
I love it. Thanks, Keith.
No problem.
How about that? Chris Curry. And when we think about the running back position, we're often starting with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, most experience. And from there, I think most kind of assume John Emery is going to have that next opportunity. But don't forget about Chris Curry. Was able to take a red shirt last year, even while playing a little bit. Definitely got some valuable experience. I'm going to tease my other answer that I've got written down, and I'll go in depth on the other side of this break. Jacoby Stevens, again, he played last year. He's now been around for 2 years. He's played like three positions since he's been at LSU. They found a home for that cat. It's going to make a difference this year. I got more thoughts on that when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
The famous Clint D says something none of us will agree with.
Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Let's keep the conversation going. 10 minutes to 5 o'clock. Right back in. More Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. You want to have your voice heard? Call us now. We got Shay Dixon, 5 until 5:30. Our good friend from Go247.com talking LSU recruiting. A lot to talk about there. Plus, we'll flip the script. Here's a quick tease. It's football related. If you haven't gotten my drift yet, it's football season around these parts. Yeah, I'll talk NBA Finals later, but for the foreseeable future, let's keep this train rolling. And right now, we're asking your pick to click. Give us an up-and-coming player, more than one, that you're excited about this season for LSU football. 706-0111. I left off teasing the idea of Jacoby Stevens. I know that he'll be a junior. I know he came in as, what, number one safety in the country? But here's the reality. He's the same year as Grant Delpit. It was obvious from jump at the very first early enrollee spring practice the kid attended that Grant Delpit was a stud. And maybe a little bit slept on as far as the high school rankings. Since then, Stevens has gone like a boomerang to receiver, to safety, and now he's landed in a role that typically in Dave Aranda's defense is called the quarter role, right? Part linebacker, part DB. My hope is that he doesn't only play in that role for certain subset packages, because I think there could be a darn near every down roll for Jacoby Stevens. But what I don't know yet is how much it's going to take Ray Thornton coming off the field for Jacoby Stevens to get back on it. What I feel like I do know is this. I covered a number of LSU players that kind of had that role. Carnell Hatcher comes to mind. Craig Lawson comes to mind. Brandon Taylor's older brother, Curtis, comes to mind. Just guys that were almost certainly build as safeties. That's what their pedigree was, but they just could thump and they could go down to the next level. In some ways, you can even say Eric Reed was that type of guy. And I think right now we're seeing that Jacoby Stevens has found his niche, and good on Dave Aranda for helping identify it for him. So I'll give you a junior and a guy who's been on campus for 3 years as somebody who I think fits this role. Watch the production, watch the PT go up into this season from anything he's had so far. That's all I'm saying. All right, I had carved out for this segment a few clips. We spoke with Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter, last week, and some of what he had to say carries over to our conversation today. Specifically, I'll get him to go in on the wide receivers. And there was the news, I think it was last Thursday, that Giles was going to hit the transfer portal. Here's how Gordy handicaps who's standing out and who leads that room right now.
Well, I think you got to start with Jefferson. You know, I mean, Justin Jefferson, I think, continues to be the leader going in. I don't think he'll be get targeted percentage-wise as much as he did. Jerry Sullivan was really high on Justin Jefferson. And I think the change in offense will see more equal distribution of the football, much the way the New Orleans Saints do it. You know, after that, I think that for me, Chase and Marshall, or Terrence Marshall and Jamar Chase, I think are situated for some breakout years. And then, you know, you've got the 2-6-6 twins that'll be right behind them. But they have a lot of bodies. And you're wondering, you know, that Kirkland got moved back to slot. And he looked, you know, he looked pretty good. They like Racy McMath at his size and kind of a hybrid H and kind of H-back tight. He's just a physical specimen. And the slot, you know, Giles, you know, really went in the top six, top eight. And so I'll be honest with you, it surprised me maybe that it's gone that long, because I didn't see him break in the rotation.
One more from Gordy Rush before we come up on an hour break. I asked him, a la what the Saints have done with Taysom Hill the last few years with Joe Brady a part of that offensive supervision, are they going to try and find somebody as a bit of a wildcat, or is it just Joe Burrow? Is he the guy they're going to use for their physical run component out of the quarterback position?
I think he proved that he could down the end. of the end of the season. I think the question is how much exposure, you know, how much they want to expose him to taking hits. I mean, Joe Burrow took a beating last year, a lot of it with the struggles of the offensive line. But there were a couple games in the end, the bowl game, the game against Texas A&M. He was able to get it done with deceit. He has shown the ability to do that. What I found out on the Tiger Tour, we knew that Miles Brennan was not 100% healthy. In fact, you know, I think he was dressed out sometimes and really not even eligible to play, just to put the, you know, the idea that they had somebody. So I think they were conservative with Burrow last year because, one, he was beat up, and two, because Brennan wasn't 100%.
And so as we kick off our football season talk, not a bad way to do so. And hour number one, we've taken four calls, people giving their up-and-coming players that they're yoked about for LSU football. Chase said it's Apu Aika, the freshman D lineman from Salt Lake City. Mike called in and said, what about Thaddeus Moss? Straight bass, homie. Chad gave us three, the hard way. Caleb on Chase on, John Emery Jr., Racy McMath, Keith also in a McMath. But I like that he offered up Chris Curry, baby beast mode. And so this is a game we'll be able to play to and through August. We'll do the same for UL, and then we'll get some of your favorites that are set to make a bigger impact for the Saints as well. I promise you, just getting started with this thing, and we'll keep it going with Shea Dixon on the other side of this hour break. But as we come down the stretch of our 4 o'clock hour, let's wind it down with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Postseason, if you're being real, this time a year ago, I thought that all three programs, franchises we frequent, had a chance to take a step forward. And, well, they did. There aren't too many more steps you could take in the regular season. LSU won 9, you could say 10 games in the regular season last year. Saints won 13, Cajuns won 7. The next step for each of these is to do it in the postseason. LSU with a bigger lot in life in a bowl, or maybe get to the SEC title game. Cajuns possibly winning the Sun Belt Conference. And the Saints, well, we know there's only so many more steps that they could take as well. But it's going to all hinge on the postseason. That's the final word of this hour. It's a scene setter for you as well, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back, bringing Shea Dixon with us. You're listening to Bumper Sports, and we're live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love joined by the famous Clint D. And between now and 6:35, you've got Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Big day today. Not only are we kicking off football season, oh, officially, to heck with that unofficial stuff, this is us making a downhill move toward Labor Day and toward this football season. Yeah, along the way, we're going to take stops over in Hoover, SEC Media Days, plural, and then Sun Belt Conference Media Day, singular, in New Orleans. Plus, we've got all kind of training camp, fall camp, but ultimately, what we want is football, and we're going to get it sooner than later. In fact, you'll get Shea Dixon talking plenty of football recruiting here within the next 90 seconds to 2 minutes. But your biggest news of the day locally for our 5 o'clock crowd, breaking news. Cam Jordan going to turn 30 years old a month from yesterday, and he'll be sticking around New Orleans for the next 5 years. Pretty darn good chance that a former top-round draft pick out of Cal spends his entire career with the New Orleans Saints. Earlier today, news came out Jordan received a 3-year, $52.5 million extension, and this is tremendous news. The edge rusher for New Orleans, now with 5 years remaining on his deal, I think he'll be here for life, and they'll continue to develop Marcus Davenport, Sheldon Rankins, Malcolm Brown, a lot of these young players that have been drafted, brought over in free agency, they all get to keep learning from 94. I will say this before we bring on Shea. I know it's what everybody wants. It's Tuesday, and you'll get your fix. This has been one of the most impressive things that Loomis and Ireland have done, all the while bringing in talent via the draft and free agency. A lot of it really good and young that is requiring and will continue to require money. They're still keeping a lot of their core veterans happy. It's been Breeze so many times. Of course, Breeze helps out with some of the hometown deals and pushing money down the road. Today, it's Cam Jordan. This is big news for Houdat Nation. All right, enough of the pro football talk. Right now, we got to get down to business when it comes to LSU football and recruiting. Oh, we got the guy for that.
Bring him out, bring him out, bring him out.
It's time for Shea Dixon of Go247.
Here he is. Each and every Tuesday, our pleasure to pull back the curtain, and then Shea steps through, ready to ride each and every week. Shea, how the heck are you this Tuesday?
I am doing great. I am here in sunny Louisiana. The weather is nice. The birds are chirping. So if you hear them, that might be it. They're coming through the windows. So it's nice. I'm enjoying it.
I like that. Kamikaze birds. And so far, LSU under Ed Orgeron, at least this 2020 class, Shea, they're coming at people like a kamikaze mission. Right now, the number two class in the country, trailing only Clemson and now ahead of Alabama. I'll let you catch our listeners up, those that maybe aren't all over the Twitter machine all the time. What has transpired over the last 48 hours that's gotten LSU back up to this really high standing?
Yeah, they've had a run, right? I mean, we saw a number of Hold That Tiger tweets over the weekend, and the first guy they landed, Jordan Toles, right up your alley, Ben. He's a football basketball guy, and we saw some guys try that, right, now in the early 2000s at LSU, but not many people have been able to pull it off, and we'll see if Jordan Toles can. And he's been hyped up out of Baltimore since he was in fifth, sixth grade playing on the AAU circuit. So people knew about him. They said, look, this is the next great basketball Baltimore kid. And I think ultimately, look, he had Maryland, LSU, all those basketball offers. But he said he started playing football a couple years ago and realized, look, 6'2", 200 pounds, I love to hit. I like playing safety. I may try to play both, and maybe football for me is the better thing long term. And he's dove headfirst with it. And because of that, look, obviously, like I said, from Baltimore, Maryland's all over you, including Loxley with the football team. But Bill Bush made him a priority. LSU made him a priority. And they've been after him, gosh, for probably about a year now, and it paid off for him over the weekend, landing his commitment. And it, what, right before that, I guess last week, it was Major Burns, the Baton Rouge cornerback, who is now, I think, completes their cornerback class. You get Major Burns, who, by definition, by ranking, he's the highest-ranked cornerback in Louisiana and certainly one of the best in the country. And then you've already got Elias Ricks, the number one cornerback in the country. So you take a major DB haul last cycle and you keep Mo Hampton. You don't need to do a ton at corner in this class. Just go out and get the two best guys you can, and they did that. And then they wrapped up, what, on Sunday, Monday with Ollie Gay, who is an interesting prospect coming from overseas to moving to Washington with his family, Washington State. With his family, and had only played, look, he was basketball, soccer growing up, and he said midway through high school, the coaches on the team said, hey, come out, try out, let me see what you look like, and from there, they said, dude, put your focus here, and you'll get college offers, and in-state Washington, the Huskies offered him and signed him, but he had to go the JUCO route, and this will be his second year there, now it'll be at Garden City, and we're talking about a kid that's 6'6", you know, a little bit above that, 270 pounds. And while he's probably a bit raw, I think you're talking about some natural kind of athletic upside there that's going to help carry him as he gets his technique and you know, defensive playbook and all that down. So in the post Rashard Lawrence, Glenn Logan, Braden Fajoco world, they're going to need to find their sort of next name up at D end, and it's always nice to have a guy there, at least that you can bring in, that's already, you know, 20, 21 years old and is already 6'6", 6'7", 270-something pounds.
Few different topics there that we can really vibe off. Shea Dixon, go247.com, our guest. Well, you mentioned Toles. The combination of football, basketball is so difficult.
Sounds like he even recognizes that, look, it's great that they'll let me play basketball, but he knows football probably his future. But what I kind of look at, it's always nice when you can get in with the kid before his class. And LSU's done this for years. People all around the country have. If you recruit a school or an area, you've got a better chance of then going and mop it up afterwards. I think you might be able to point toward James Bishop on the basketball side and say, look, Wade and company, they became a name in that Baltimore, D.C. area, and now they just go back to hunting grounds.
Absolutely. And like I say, and I said before, he's on a football scholarship, right? So Will Wade and him have nothing to lose. I mean, you could put him on the roster. He can help you out, however. And if it doesn't work out, you move on. And he said it. He gave a quote and said, look, I get it. If the seasons overlap, it's a lot to ask for, but that's my life. I just grind for football and basketball. You know, he doesn't do social media big. He's not out there taking a bunch of visits. And just said, hey, look, if it doesn't work out, I'm coming to play football, because I think if an NFL is what I really have a shot at, and, you know, a kid who's 6'2", sometimes these guys get outgrown by other guys on the basketball court in terms of really high-level prospects. But for football safety-wise, he's great. I mean, he's a top 10 safety in the country. And as he said, if I'm going to pick a school to play both at, I might as well, and I'm trying to play football long-term, I might as well play at, you know, DBU.
There's another reason I brought that up, Shay, and people have asked me for the last few weeks, is this a one-year thing, this investment that Ogeron and LSU are making as being a national brand, especially what they're doing in California? The obvious answer is no, right? If you're planting seeds, you want to keep reaping the benefits, but I'll ask you, I guess, that same question. If the state of Louisiana picks back up for 2021 and beyond, how much does this still help them, and how much do you expect they'll continue to be a national brand even after what's becoming a pretty landmark class?
I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, but I would just say it depends obviously always on what Louisiana has, because they're going to take those guys. But does this work? You know, it's working right now. You know, they've got kids from seven different states or whatever committed, and you're going from the Eastern Seaboard and then, as you said, into California, and they'll pick up some other guys along the way. We could talk about Arizona kids, stuff like that. So if you get them all committed and then they stay committed, because that's the fear, right, that they're not from Louisiana, they're not on campus all the time, and someone else is going to get in their ear, and then ultimately they wouldn't sign with you. And if that proves to be the case, like if the class somewhat falls apart, not saying completely, but, you know, if you start losing guys, you rethink the strategy a little bit. But I think that they'll stick by the blueprint, because, look, that's what Bama does. It. I mean, Clemson does it. This is what schools do. You just go out and get the best players in the country. And I think all LSU was waiting on was to be that sort of national brand. That'd be a good example. One of the tight ends told me recently that he was looking at a number of schools, and then when asked why LSU, he said, well, they played in the Fiesta Bowl, you know, and I want to play in the NFL, and, you know, they get to play in the SEC, and then they'll be on a big bowl game, and they'll be on TV, and everyone's talking about it, and that sort of gives you a max exposure, right? Then everybody's going to know about you. And it wasn't like when LSU was playing in Florida, you know, for a few years in bowl games, people weren't saying that. And Orgeron kept saying that, right? You don't know how important playing in a New Year's Six Bowl is to our recruiting efforts. And now, I kind of get it when kids like that are trying to say, look, I'm weighing my options. And if I'm, you know, I'm looking at these handful of schools, and LSU's the only one that's in the SEC and that can put me on ESPN or CBS each week, then that has some attractive qualities. So I do think it's something they'll continue to do as long as they're playing well on the field and have that national brand grip.
Shay, one more for me on the recruiting front. You've got a great story up after this weekend and an official visit for four-star wide receiver E.J. Williams. He and his mom apparently really dig things in Baton Rouge. But I'll ask you this. While cornerback and DB may be kind of firmed up, especially with the Major Burns commitment, what about the receiver position? A lot of youth there coming into this season, but how much more will they need for that 2020 class?
Well, I think they're going to take at least one more, and they've got three committed. You've got Kayshon Boutte, who obviously all the listeners here know about out of Westgate. But you're also relying on Rakeem Jarrett, who's already out there, you know, saying he's taking visits from the Washington, D.C. area, and Jermaine Burton, who lives in California, is a Calabasas kid. So they're, again, as I alluded to, you have to worry about, okay, do they stick the whole time? And because of that, LSU's just going to keep recruiting other receivers, and they've been hard, very evidently, after E.J. Williams, who went to and he won an Alabama 7A state title last year with Peter Parrish as his quarterback, and Parrish goes to school, obviously, at LSU right now, joining Brennan and Burrow in the quarterback room. So they've got a little bit of a tie there. Tommy Robinson, LSU's recruiting coordinator, is from his hometown and also went to the same high school. So they know people in the area. Mickey Joseph's recruiting him hard, and he left and said, look, it's the best visit I've ever been on, and he's been to all of them. He's been to Clemson, Bama, Auburn, you name it. He sort of stepped foot on campus. So I think it's good to hear that, because I think that at the end of the day, they wouldn't mind landing four receivers, and even in that stretch, obviously, Ben, you've got to worry about, are you keeping them all? So it's good to hear a kid like E.J. Williams leave a visit like that and say, hey, look, LSU's all of a sudden very much in the picture for me.
That's his thoughts. On the other side, everybody's going to get mine. In fact, Shea heard that we're kicking off football season today on the program. He's got some LSU and maybe even a Cajun football season question or two for me. Don't go anywhere. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
We're going to do things different.
Can we be just like we were?
Gonna flip the script.
It's time to flip the script with Shea Dixon on 103.7 The Game.
You know I'll flip.
I'll take that baton and run with the coach anytime. And I'll take our next guest, same thing, anytime he wants. Bumper to Bumper Sports, back in on 103.7 The Game, a Tuesday rite of passage. It's time to flip the script. Shea, I've declared this as the official beginning of football season. It's our kickoff here on B2BS, so why don't we go ahead and stay in the lane there? Let's talk some damn football.
I'm a day one starter, it appears. I've cracked the lineup.
I like that. You want to go LSU there first?
There must be a lot of guys suspended for game one.
Yes, we have issued drug tests, and you came out unscathed, so you are the starter.
All right, I'm ready.
Would you want to go LSU first? I know you got a little LSU and a little UL.
Yeah, we'll wrap up with UL. Let's start with some LSU questions. And before we dive straight team, let's go player. We know Grant Delpit gets a lot of love, Joe Burrow a lot of love, a lot of dudes broke out last year, Justin Jefferson and them sort of became these household names, so we're gearing up for 2019. Inform the listeners, Benjamin, who did you see last year that nobody's talking about right now that you say you imagine is going to have a pretty impactful 2019 season?
Well, I'm going to cheat because people know who number six is, but I'll say they're not talking about him enough, and it's Jacob Phillips. Being in the shadow of Devin White was one thing. The fact that Phillips, for a number of games last year, was their best, most consistent tackler, even with White out there, is another. And that was the case. It's not a slight against Devin. I think Jacob Phillips is about to be an all-SEC performer this year. I think he's going to go triple-digit tackles. I think there's a good chance that more games than not, he's the best player in your defense. Yes, I think that includes the man in the back, Grant Delpit, who probably would be a top five or six overall pick. That includes a freak day one starter at corner in Derek Stingley Jr., a bunch of veterans up front, Caleb Vaughn Chaseau, who I know you're high on, and people probably are sleeping on his return as well. But I'm going to tell you right now, there's a good chance that Jacob Phillips is the best overall player on their team this year. And the fact that he's not being celebrated in some circles as such, I'll give him some pub here.
I like it. Bold comments right away. We've got more to come. Who? Now let's go some games. We'll start here, and we'll cheat because it's not the season opener. But when you tack, or when you look at going to Austin, and you compare them to the other season openers they had Miami last year, they've had a marquee run of them. Where does this one stack up? Because I get the feeling nobody was talking about, and it might be because it's in Austin, it might be because they're playing Texas, and that might be the answer. But a lot of people on my board, buddies, everyone is excited about the prospect of going over to Texas and playing the Longhorns in their place.
This is bigger than any of them. And I'm not just a prisoner of the moment, because there's one that was close, and it's Oregon. That was always going to be pretty significant when you had 3-4, I think it was, in the country
gliding. Yeah, Oregon was good, right.
Oh, yeah. The significance of that was, you know, immense. And it was close to LSU's backyard, so I think for the home fans it was kind of a win-win. But this is bigger than that because it's part of a home-and-home. The idea of having two iconic programs like this, getting down in Austin and then calling Baton Rouge, that's fantastic. And so this, for me, you've got a team in Texas with a coach that, whether they want to admit it or not, LSU certainly wanted them some Herman a couple of years ago. They didn't get him. Now he's building something pretty special, I think, in Texas. Is it going to be, you know, Oklahoma big? Can they overtake them and become the new monster of the Big 12? Time will tell, but a game like this can have some impact and some bearing on it. Are they ready to play with the big boys? Can they close one season by stomping Georgia in New Orleans and then virtually open the next by beating LSU in their backyard? That would be a pretty big series of statements by UT. So this is bigger than any of them because the opponent is pretty legit, probably better than any of the LSU openers, maybe except for Oregon. I could make an argument that they're better than Wisconsin and TCU and even Miami last year. So the opponent's really good, but the stage is what makes this one even more special. So going to Austin, hey, man, I'm ready to roll.
All right. Well, what about coming to Baton Rouge? What is your what game are you most looking forward to watching play out from the home slate this year? And I think, while I think most people's answer would be one they're quick to say, I think there's a few good options in there.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, you've got Florida, Auburn, and Texas A&M all on the home slate this year. Is that not correct?
That would be correct.
And so I always enjoy Auburn home games. The last time that happened, DJ Chark turned around a head-scratcher for game from the Auburn perspective. I think everyone's going to want to gravitate toward Texas A&M, and I'm not going to stop them. That's got a lot of juice behind it. I'll tell you that the answer is Florida, though, and we haven't had this game, it feels like, since the Clinton administration in Baton Rouge. So there's still bad blood there. There always will be, and even if their AD's gone, well, you know what? LSU's is too, so let's get this thing going with some new guys in place. There's just something about LSU-Florida that's always special to me. So 2 years running in the swamp, you bet your ass I'll take that one in Baton Rouge this year.
What is the best game, and now you can go any game, what is the... what's the toughest out for LSU this year that's not Bama?
Oh, that's tough. It's probably A&M, even though that game's at home. It's the last game of the season, and so you just never know how much fumes. I mean, forget about seven overtimes. It's game 12 of a rigorous schedule, so you just kind of never know where you're at in terms of health, where you're at in terms of what you have left to play for. So it's just that game being so tough to project. I'll say that the two toughest outs for LSU that aren't Bama are Texas because it's so early and on the road, and then Texas A&M because it's so late, you don't know what you have left.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. I'm pretty much on par with you with most everything there. So, and I do, I'll give you this, a non-conference game to watch, I think, is Utah State because their OC left for Texas Tech, but they probably have maybe one of the two or three best quarterbacks LSU's going to play all year.
Okay.
And they were a very good team last year, double-digit wins. So I do say don't sleep on the Utah State game. That will be entertaining, at least for the non-conference slate. Let me go to UL. Let's go over to the centering in the Lafayette area. Obviously, Billy Napier and them got a bowl game with Tulane last year. They went 7-7. And we know this, and Billy Napier would not have anything less. They want to make a bowl game. But what do you say to that in year two of what are reasonable expectations? And let's maybe say it in the mind of Billy Napier of do you win one more game? Are you shooting for a 9-win season? What's the mood around the Raging Cajun program right now after a really good recruiting cycle?
I think that maybe the expectation is to represent the Western Division again in the Sun Belt Conference title game. Are you going to be good enough to host that thing? Boy, I don't know. You're going to have to make up a lot of ground on App State and in even some of the other teams that probably, have a little bit of ground that you're trying to catch up on from the Eastern Division. But I'll say this. They won that division last year when not anybody expected them to. If they could do it again, that would be another successful season. But there are some other barometers. Put the fear of God into Mississippi State for at least a couple of quarters to start the season. Shay, that's like an 11 a.m. kickoff in New Orleans, Labor Day weekend. So there's some potential for that to get a little weird, and that certainly would make some waves nationally, even if they don't win it, to be competitive for a little bit against Keaton Thompson and and a revamped Mississippi State team. But I think there's an opportunity to maybe win one additional game in the Sun Belt, play for the conference title game again, and then continue a bowl streak under Billy Napier. I think that's realistic, and I think, honestly, they're heading toward it right now with everything I witnessed on this roster.
Football season has not begun yet, but it feels like it with what we just did.
I'm telling you, man. And I'm glad I made you a starter. We'll have to put a helmet sticker on you for next week.
Ooh, already an MVP. I like it.
He is Shea Dixon, and we're going to catch up with him down the road. Otherwise, oh, he knows we'll be following. Go247.com. Thank you, amigo.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Scorching hot. Kind of like the sun. I know, it was a little cool outside, but for the most part, it's going to be freaking hot all summer long. And with summer in high gear, we got a way for you to cool off. A trip to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in Baton Rouge. Acadiana Sports Station wants to send you there with a free family four-pack of tickets. Here's how you enter. It's free and easy. Just text H2O to 68683. That's H2O to 68683, and you'll be entered to win a family four-pack of tickets to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in BR. All right, we're halfway through hour number two. When we return, Toronto, shame on you. Not for your performance, how you reacted to something last night. Have to hit on this as we throw some shade. We'll take your phone calls as well. And then Robin Fambro talking high school football at 6:15. You are dialed in to Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back post-haste on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Just as gutsy of a sports decision as you'll see in a long time, and the way that it was received north of the border, disgraceful. You had to know this part of the show was coming. Ben Love, the famous Clint D, Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back at you on 103.7 The Game. As always, we appreciate the work from our good friend Shea Dixon, and he was spectacular today. A lot on the recruiting front because there's a lot to get to, and LSU covering a whole lot of bases, so we'll leave that in the rear view. Unfortunately, what we have to look forward to, what I must hit on during this segment, is what came across on television, social media, basically any media outlet that you have, as horribly as anything in a long, long time. Yeah, I'm talking about you, Toronto. But first, your daily reminder, it's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the Cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. You can also trust top down, starting with Mark, that the management team is going to sit down, create a vision, and then fulfill it for you before this football season. But you better hurry right now. It's almost the middle of June. Go right now to the website, patiocenter.com. Let them up your patio game. And remember, they're the kings of customization. That's why it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Kevin Durant, playing in his first action, over nine games he missed, and it was termed as a calf injury. Everybody who watched what KD did against the Houston Rockets a few series back, I think it's pretty clear that it looked decidedly south of the calf region. A lot of people speculated that it was an Achilles. And certainly, if you were watching the first half of that game last night in Toronto, it looked exactly like that. It looked exactly, from a location standpoint, to be ankle adjacent. And speaking as somebody who has completely ruptured an Achilles, even torn his tendon from the bone, it was awful, gruesome, felt like I got shot from behind in a basketball gym. I have absolutely just the utmost of respect for what Kevin Durant did last night. And we talked about this prior to the game. I mean, prior to game five, we knew KD was putting his, career at this point on the line, because this guy has free agency to contend with. A lot of people suspect he wants to go play for the Knicks. Others say he could end up any number of different places, maybe even stay in Golden State. But the thought was he wants to squeeze value out of what he's got in this free agency period. Well, he went out last night with his team down 3-1 and tried to give them a boost. And I said yesterday, it might end up being more Willis Reed than anything tangible, stats-based and factually backed with performance on the floor. But when you watch what happened to him late in the first half yesterday, it was gruesome. And the shade today, I'm sure you've seen it. It's as obvious as any I've thrown in a couple of years since Patio Center suggested this would be a good idea for radio, and we agreed. The people of Toronto that cheered vociferously inside of that arena, all of the different around Canada and Toronto bar shots that were taking, where people literally were throwing drinks up in the air and going kumbaya because a man probably tore his Achilles. It's one of the most disgusting displays I've ever seen. And the crappy part about it, it was damn near unanimous from the people that were together in arms and in full throat, especially at the game. And every bit so far of the follow-up conversation, I think is spot on. And we have a lot of this kind of, almost online mob mentality that goes on. And once somebody thinks it, in this groupthink world we occupy, a lot of people tend to gravitate toward it. And a lot of times that can be bad in sports. Today I saw where hopefully people were standing back up against stupidity. Because the mob mentality I saw today, all throughout Twitter especially, all had to do with the dehumanization of athletes, in particular those that ascend to star icon status. And I am right there helping drive that bus as best I can. Because if all you do is see Kevin Durant as the guy that turned his back on OKC, and from there, hell, anything that happens to him, hey, he deserves it. To hell with you if you think Kevin Durant deserved to snap his Achilles like a twig last night because he pretty heroically tried to go out and help his team. Now, I'm also not ignorant to the fact that there's a definite disparity in what heroic could mean to a lot of people. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that that is more heroic than somebody that puts their life on the line for our country. I get the difference between the two, so don't try to play a semantics game and take me down that road. But let's be very clear about one thing. Nobody deserves to get injured during the course of play. If it happens, show some respect. Give a moment of silence. If you're happy because it happened to somebody your team is playing, it's a very perverse reaction, but do what people have done for decades and generations of watching sports in those moments. Try to keep that under wraps, would you? Because somebody's season, and likely his next season, just went by the wayside. So this guy last night did something that, frankly, his agent probably would never have advised, that probably the medical staff with Golden State, I would sure assume, wasn't psyched about. And yet putting himself at risk like that, people are going nuts and bonkers cheering about it. I can't tell you how much that ticks me off. And I'm not taking up for KD just because I like the guy. He's done some stuff that I don't like over these last couple of years. But nobody deserves that. The people at Toronto, wow, absolutely disgusting behavior. And I cannot believe that that's anywhere near an acceptable norm. You know, in this program, we've come out against Boogie Cousins a good bit. I think he's been a part of throwing shade not too long ago. And yet when Boogie Cousins was asked about the Kevin Durant haters, what does he think about them right now? Bleep them, is what he said twice in a row, but it started with an F. I'm going to go ahead and echo that for you, Boogie. This one, me and you are in lockstep on, brother. It's ridiculous that there are people out there cheering the long-term injury of Kevin Durant.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Formulated the words, I guess as best I could there, but you could probably tell there's some frustration for me. I just think there are lines we shouldn't cross, right? As people that are consuming sports, as fans, and That was pretty despicable. I mean, there were a lot of angles where you could see just blatant out-and-out cheering and jubilation that the man went crumbling to the ground. So, wow, what a meat grinder it must be in today's society where that's how we feel about sports on the biggest stage. The fact that he put himself out there and did that, though, I'm still pretty blown away by it. In fact, we do want to talk some more, and we will. On the other side of this break, we haven't gone in a lot yet on the NBA Finals because, after all, this is football kickoff 2019. Yeah, June 11th. I proclaimed that yesterday, so we've been almost all in on the gridiron so far. Chatted up with Sharif Eishak, Shea Dixon. In case you missed either or both of those interviews, they are available on demand. Just go to 1037thegame.com or the free mobile app, click or tap on demand. You can listen to Sharif wax on Cam Jordan and what the Saints are doing in this offseason, and plenty of LSU recruiting chatter from Shea Dixon. We've got only but the one guest left, and she is spectacular. Robin Fambro coming your way at 6:15, the latest from the world of the LHSAA Executive Committee meetings. How might that affect where games are played championship style next year? This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in, and we'll flip it over, do a little NBA Finals Game 5 reaction next on 103.7 The Game.
To the show.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Loff on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 1037 The Game.
Back in with more of the good stuff. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live on 103.7 The Game. Couple of reminders. What we have going on, what we've got cooking for you inside the 103.7 The Game clubhouse. You can enter to win a $25 gift card to Mabel's Kitchen, located inside Cypress Bayou. You can also enter to win a $150 gift certificate to Mr. Lester's Steakhouse, also located inside Cypress Bayou. It's free and it's easy. You just need to go to the Clubhouse Rewards Club at 1037thegame.com or our free mobile app, and then we could be sending you, and I mean very soon, to Mabel's Kitchen or Mr. Lester's Steakhouse, both at Cypress Bayou. Only way to enter is to go to our clubhouse. All right. Right now, the leader in the clubhouse of the NBA Finals, it's still the Raptors. It's 3-2 after last night. Some pretty historic things happen. We just touched on one of them. I mean, most notably, Kevin Durant doing one of the most gutsy things that anybody has witnessed in a while. And yeah, the reaction was pretty sour up in Toronto. But I think a lot of Golden State players took some heart from it. It's not that they required that. These guys are professional enough, right? Competitive, savvy enough. They want to win this damn thing on their own. Now they've at least got a little bit more of a puncher's chance. And that's what I want to talk about in this segment. Is it possible that Golden State's about to pull on Toronto what Cleveland did them in 2016? My answer, I'm not ready to push that button yet. Although it's impossible to miss, Dubs are 3-point favorites on Thursday in Game 6 back by the Bay. So what do we like and what's sustainable from Game 5? Why don't we start here? The Splash Brothers played a combined 83 minutes last night. Barely came off the floor, gave you a combined 57 points, and both of them pumped in a barrage of three-pointers. Klay with 7 triples, Steph with 5, and even before he exited, Kevin Durant gave you 3 of 3 from deep. So, again, they were much better from distance. They scored 106 on the road. They're going to have to up that number. But the defense will have to travel back home as well. You look at the rest of the starters, the rest of the guys who went major minutes in Game 5 for the defending champs, Iggy Pop, Andre Iguodala, 5 points, 3 assists, but his impact is always going to be on the defensive side. How about 4 blocks for Iguodala on a huge stage in Toronto? He's going to have to travel back. They'll need him in a huge way again, going up against Kawhi Leonard, and trying to limit the claw over by the bay. But it's going to take more Boogie as well. Never thought I'd have said this. And he had to be part of the plans no matter what was going on with Kevin Durant, right? But Boogie last night, 20 minutes off the bench, gave you 14 points and 6 rebounds to go along with the steal and a block. Kevin Looney, it was thought for a while he might be lost for the series, came in and gave you some much-needed time, 18 minutes off the pine as well. But that's kind of what it comes down to. If you're Steve Kerr, suddenly you've got to gravitate away from guys who brought you to the dance. Between Steph, Clay, and Dre, you'll have to get the vast majority of your scoring, and from Clay, a good bit of defensive prowess. But Iguodala's going to have to go more than just 30 minutes in Game 6. Cousins, Looney, Sean Livingston, Quinn Cook, all those guys were 12-plus minutes in Game 5. Again, no Durant, and he only finished with 12 minutes in the ballgame last night. But you're going to have to account for those minutes, and somehow, some way, you're going to have to account for those points. If not, the defense is going to have to ratchet up a level or two. But I do find it interesting, as I mentioned, somehow, some way, the two-time defending world champs are three-point favorites. And so Thursday, we'll have Game 6 at the home of the Warriors, and if necessary, Game 7 is scheduled for Sunday evening. And I did say yesterday, before Game 5, I like the chances of this thing getting past last night, getting past Thursday, and getting to Sunday. So I told you, it's either a closeout in Game 5 or it gets back to Toronto. And at that point, I said the Raptors will win in Game 7. I'm not going to take my foot off the gas there. I'm still at the point where I believe we're going to see the Raptors win their first ever championship. It's just hard for me to see this. It's hard for me to see this Dubs team. This would be the ultimate, frankly, in their dynasty because of how banged up they are. It's hard for me to see them win three straight games. I know that they have the makeup to do it, but do they have the bodies at this point? Do they have the firepower? I'm just not sure. Because that's the thing with the team that can shoot it at times as well as Toronto does. What are you going to do on a night where Van Vliet and Danny Green and Kyle Lowry and everybody is clicking from deep? What do you do on a night where they hit higher than a 40% clip from downtown? I'll tell you what you do. You lose the NBA Finals. And that's the spot you're in right now. You basically gave them three chances after going up 3-1. Nick Nurse's Raptors, they have three chances to catch fire in one of those three games. Didn't exactly happen. A one-point thriller of a victory for Golden State on the road last night. And they're going to have to defend their home court, and then they're going to have to go back on the road and do it again. And neither of those times is Toronto going to drill this thing home. I just wouldn't bet on it at this point. If it does happen, it's one of the bigger bed wets in a long, long time. At least when it happened a few years back, Golden State up on Cleveland and LeBron, we could point to a few things, right? We could point to LeBron and the block. More than that, we could point to Draymond Green going out of that ball game and being suspended for what would have been a potential closeout. So this would feel like a choke of higher order, given the fact that the Warriors are so incredibly injured. All in all, as we head toward our hour break, I'll tell you, this still feels like Toronto's championship to lose. But again, we got a little more intrigue after what happened last night. Been a busy 2 hours so far. A couple of tremendous guests, Sharif Eishak going all in on the Saints and Cam Jordan. Of course, you heard earlier this hour from Shea Dixon. Hey, he felt the vibes. He said, now it feels like football season after what we did today. So I'm glad we're starting to kind of inject that right into the veins, right? I want to mainline that into everybody right now. Get the football feeling, because it ain't going anywhere for, oh, I don't know, about, let's see here, 7 months? 7+ months? It's going to be with us for a while. Hopefully, if the Saints make the run everybody believes they will, might be talking about football, meaningful, actual on-field football, all the way through the month of January and into February. So this is just the beginning. My pleasure to bring it to you and kind of get you indoctrinated here on a Tuesday. All right, we got another half hour to go. Actually, a slice more than that. Thank you, Astros, for the weird clock that you always provide us. We're going to fill up our time wisely. Robin Fambro coming your way in about 17, 18 minutes. We'll talk LHSAA executive committee meetings and what it means for where high school championships will be for 2019-2020. A little bit of a change with how they did that today. I will get Robin to explain that. Plus, we'll continue on our football kickoff theme. Taking you up until the first pitch, Astros hosting the Brewers, first of a two-game set. First pitch, 7:10, Astro launch at 6:35. We are Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Rolling right in, hour number three. Welcome in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports back and live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. Only one guest to go, but she is absolutely phenomenal when it comes to high school reporting. Robin Fambro, the advocate, will be with us about 10 or 11 minutes from right now. But between now and then, CD, I want to go in. Let's see if we can get across sporting lines here. We'll keep it strictly professional. Football, basketball, and baseball. On the pro football side of things, this news out within the last couple of minutes where I'm seeing it on the Twitterverse, the Oakland Raiders have been selected for Hard Knocks this August. Is your heart still? Are you able to keep it still after that news? Phenomenal.
Oh, I can't wait for that. I mean, it's definitely not Cleveland Browns, because I can about imagine how great that would be, like, go back-to-back this year. Year two of Baker Mayfield, you've got OBJ and Jarvis Landry in the house. I would love to see that, but again, John Gruden, that whole bleep show going on, that's going to be fun. That's going to be just pure drama.
We don't even know if they technically have a home. Right? I mean, seriously, yeah. They're almost nomadic, wandering to Las Vegas, which, you know, as it were, it's not a bad place to wander toward. But still, they've got a whole year where they have to figure out where the hell they're going to play. And now, yeah, I'm okay with that. We're going to have the HBO cameras follow around the Oakland Raiders for Hard Knocks. Our good friend Jacques Doucet, WAFB-TV and BR, points out that a couple of former LSU Tigers, Arden Key and now Foster Moreau, will be part of Hard Knocks for this season. For what it's worth, yeah, I don't think I would have wanted Cleveland Pardue. I know LSU fans may disagree with me. The amount of bro-festing going on between Odell and Jarvis, that might have been a little too much for like a day-to-day, week-to-week type of check-in thing. I'll just check in on them when they start playing football in September. But yeah, Jarvis, Odell, reunited, it feels so good. I don't need, you know, Hard Knocks, the Peaches and Herb edition. Still, the Oakland Raiders, I'm okay with this. Let's switch it over to pro baseball. And two of the best in the MLB are going to show off tonight from Minute Maid Park. Astros v. Brewers, first of a two-game quickie over at the Juice Box. I mentioned already that you have the Astros 23 games, I believe, ahead of 500. The Brewers 10 games up on even Steven 500. It'll be the first time that these two have met since 2016. Brewers were on the cusp of the World Series last year. Astros, kind of sort of the same. Could this be a preview of the 2019 Fall Classic? Time will tell. It'll be Brad Peacock versus Freddy Peralta. And I'll tell you this. I've had the chance to listen to a lot more Astros baseball recently. Got to take them in person when they played the Bo Sox a couple of weeks ago. This team, what they're doing without their full complement, is incredibly impressive. But they're not going to have to do it for that much longer. Once some of these guys start to come off the IL, this team, hopefully, by the time they get back from the Midsummer Classic and the All-Star Game, are playing in high form. So I'm looking forward to this series. Decent little barometer. And, of course, they've been on the road for so darn long as well. So it'll be good to have the Astros back at home. And see if they can build on what they did against the Orioles this weekend.
It's going to be a huge step in the right direction. If they can wind up, probably, if they sweep this series, it's a huge step in the right direction when you consider what's been going on with the Milwaukee Brewers. You brought it up. I mean, I'm sudden two-minute drill. NL Central leading Milwaukee Brewers. Who would have thought that a couple of years ago? After kind of, it seemed like consistently inconsistent Milwaukee Brewers baseball, you'd seen this team perform at a different level. And if you can sweep this, I think he winds up looking pretty good. I think more importantly, I'd love to see Christian Yelich at least have a rough couple games, because that winds up helping you out a lot more in terms of your pitching staff and builds their confidence.
There's CD. I just went on a whole segment where I said don't root on players to get hurt, but you can root on them to perform
the
poorly,
struggle.
And that's actually okay. You'll yes. be all right with that. That might be at the root yeah. of all fanhood, is the team that I'm playing, I need them to perform poorly
yes.
tonight. All right, I said we'd keep it strictly professional, but that we'd go across sporting lines. Let's get back to pro basketball. It's been a good bit of our latter portion, hour two, on the Raptors-Warriors game. 106-105 victory for Golden State. I'll continue to tell you, I think they take game six, send it back to Toronto, and I like the Raptors' chance of defending home court to get the ball game. I mentioned solid three-point shooting from Golden State. I gave you some of the specific individual player numbers. As a team, the Dubs shot 52% in the first half from downtown last night. I don't believe that's sustainable. And so ultimately, who's going to go on a run? Can Golden State keep Toronto and their sharp shooters from going on one in either Game 6 or Game 7? That is what it's going to take. But very quickly, and I mean in a hurry, this thing's going to go from being all about the NBA Finals to the draft. And you may literally just have 4 days that separate the two. If this thing gets to Game 7 on Sunday, you only make it four more before you get to the NBA draft Thursday night. That'll be a big deal, not just for the Pelicans, but I think for a lot of franchises looking to hit the reset button, looking to add assets. And somewhere between Game 6/7, whenever the finals end, somewhere between that point and the morning of the draft is when I think I'm ready to make my prediction. I think that is when this AD deal gets done. And I still just have a hard time seeing it being Boston. When this whole thing first came out, the Woj bomb, some 5 or 6 months ago, mid-season, right? It was my estimation that Boston was the best partner, at least for what they could give in return. But it doesn't mean that they're the team that you can get over on. And I don't think Danny Ainge is going to let that happen. I also don't think with the Kyrie Irving thing, it positions him well to do this deal. So I think this thing gets done between the end of the finals and the morning of the draft. And my gut tells me to lean against Boston. I think it ends up being one of the two teams in L.A., perhaps the Knicks, maybe even the Nets get in. But it's interesting. And Andrew Lopez said it yesterday. The blueprint right now in Toronto gives him some confidence that maybe, just maybe, the team that gets Anthony Davis wasn't one of the front runners after all. Because it wasn't the Raptors that were expected to go in on Kawhi and land him from San Antonio. But that is eventually how that deal got done. All right, we got to take a break. Coming up here, a reminder, if you missed either of our interviews so far, Sharif Eishak, Shea Dixon, make sure you peep it on demand. Go to the website, 1037thegame.com, or the free mobile app, and just click or tap on demand. You can get all of your favorite interviews and entire shows at the click of a button. We'll have Robin Fambro coming up on the other side. High school championships. The locations have been determined, sort of, and only for half the time as normal. We'll explain in full detail when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben and Clint taking you home, and we'll be back live on Acadiana Sports Station. 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
Let's go, people.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Music.
Just about quarter after 6 o'clock, we're back one more time. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game. Always so much going on in the world of high school sports, and, well, this time of year is no different. Let's go get educated. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, had the pleasure of running into her this weekend at the LSWA Sports Writers Awards in Natchitoches. Our guest is Robin Fambro, high school beat writer for The Advocate. How are you, Robin?
Doing good. How about you?
Life is good here. I'm curious. How about things in Baton Rouge for the executive committee's annual summer meetings? Anything too turbulent?
Yeah, it was actually kind of a, I don't know what you'd call it, it was a unique finish. I don't know what you want to call it, a frantic finish, but it was interesting. We had, today was mostly for reports. Yesterday was championship bids and a few appeals that were in closed session, actually more than a few, 9 of them. And those, by the way, those appeals results, the rulings on those won't be released until later this week. And the media was not allowed in there. But the biggest takeaway, and it was actually the last item of business, LHSAA past president Niles Riche of Assumption made a motion charging LHSAA executive director Eddie Bonine and his staff to come up with at least two proposals designed to bring LHSA schools back together.
How about
and
that?
Or limit the split where it is right now.
Wow.
It sounds like hey, have you heard this before? Well, yeah, actually we have, but it comes from an interesting place. The select schools came in to, well, actually there's a select school member on the committee, John LeBlanc, nice fellow from Loyola and Shreveport. And J.P. Kelly from Catholic High was one of the local people. He came in and joined him at the table. And they reported on the meeting that most people know about that select schools had in April, before the LHSA's April meeting. And since then, those schools have been corresponding back and forth. And, of course, the big question we all have is, what is this championship piece going to be like next year? With select schools doing their own thing, and we know what the non-select schools are going to do. They're going to be tied to the specific events. And the report that they gave really wasn't as much about that. It was about, and they plan a meeting on July 29th, the select schools do. The select schools would like to form a subgroup within the LHSAA, similar to the LHSCA, that would make what they do binding for select schools. And they believe it would give them the push they need to get everything organized. As it is now, you just have people going in different directions. Or that's what it appears to most of us. Or you have different people. It's, everybody has an idea, I guess, would be the best thing. And they have representation. They have some people lined up. They just feel like, being a subgroup, or some people would call it a sub-governance, would help them. And they ask, has the LHSAA given any thought to this? And the direct answer was, no. So, and they talked about their reasons why. They just feel like it would give them the ability, again, to channel things together a little better than they can right now. And they're still at a point kind of like they were, since all of this passed, kind of seeking a little guidance, still trying to figure out where you're going. And then, of course, that ends. They do a few other items for changes for next year in terms of how some playoff brackets will be done. Kind of like good housekeeping stuff. And then Mr. Bonine starts his report, Eddie Bonine starts his report, and he talks about how he believes that the LHSAA's championship events really do have the feel, the look, the smell, everything of a real championship event, and that's what student athletes should be involved in. And, no offense, obviously, people have nice football stadiums and nice baseball facilities, but, you want, in theory, you want your kids to have that, and I know it's overused, championship experience. And that's kind of about as far as it went. They discussed a little bit, and then the rest of his report was done in executive session, where I assume they did a little more soul searching over this and where they wanted to go. And there was, you know, a little more debate when they came out. Basically, they're going to come up with some plans, but they're also going to survey not just member schools, but also coaches. And they're going to get some student athletes, which I really like, to get their thoughts on, you know, where do you think this needs to be? Do you want to see schools back together? You know, first of all, you come up with plans, you come up with those options, but do you really want to see schools back together? One option that's been bandied about is just go back to where you, if you have a split, it's only in football. In other words, bring the other sports back together. Of course, now, you know, who knows exactly what's going to happen with that, but my understanding is as the LHSA moves forward, and like everybody else, they have a busy summer. This is going to be a thing that's on their plate where they're doing things and coming up with ideas. And I'm sure they'll have some help along the way from some people who will have suggestions for them. You know, it'll just be interesting to see how this piece plays out because, you know, most of us, I think, thought we were past that point where you would do something like this to try to bring everything back together because everything has been so divisive the opposite way. And then, of course, what was voted on in January, like it or not, and I know there are issues for the select schools. I understand that. But, you know, I understand their frustration and their need to try to have some say over what they do, which is sort of what had been approved previously. But by the same token, when you do this, you also kind of push things a little further apart from the table. And of course, when you come in today and say, hey, we want our own governance, you know, sort of, or our own group, like the Coaches Association, and that's not coming from an awful place, but it's really not. It's coming from a thoughtful place, but it's just different when you're thinking about a group of your schools, because before you had one group of schools that's all been one group, and now you would have two. Now, I actually proposed this several years ago when they had their issues, but, you know, it's just the way this whole thing has evolved has been, it's been interesting and concerning, I guess, for all of us.
Well, I want to go a little deeper there. We've got another few moments with Robin Fambro of The Advocate. The big news out of yesterday were the awards champ, the LHSA awarded championships to a lot of places that we're familiar with, but they did it only for a one-year period. What was the thinking behind that?
Because of the uncertainty regarding the split championships. That is the whole reason behind it. They didn't want to be in a situation like they were a couple of years ago. If you recall, when the split for basketball, baseball, and softball was approved, they were in the middle of a two-year contract. So they had to actually get with those sites and, you know, I don't know whether negotiate is the right term. I mean, everybody accommodated them, and they did all the games they were supposed to do. But basically, the sites that had those events at that time, like for basketball and baseball, they only expected to have 7 championships, not 12. And that was a greater use of facilities. There was a whole lot more that went into it. Staffing and volunteers, and this way, if there is some sort of a change after this year, they can then address it. And I know concerning also for a lot of people in South Louisiana was the decision to push wrestling back to Bossier City. You know, that's one that wrestling coaches throughout South Louisiana have had issues with, and they had come up with a series of potential sites in South Louisiana, including the River Center and the Cajun Dome. And what it came down to this time, and this is where a one-year bid may help, is that the sites that they wanted, including the River Center, which I think was kind of one that was being leaned toward, they didn't have the dates available to host the event next year. So then if they come back and bid the bid again next year, the River Center, they believe, will have those dates. And there may be somebody else who steps forward, whether it's the Cajun Dome or someone else who has the dates that they could host it. But it's all contingent on that just because, and Mr. Bonine's reasoning was this, they didn't want to be caught like they were in the middle of a contract where you would have to make some major changes and, you know, it puts a hardship really on the sites, and it's really not the contract they signed up for. And so I think that was the right move. And it'll be interesting to see how all of this evolves over the next few months, just where it leads us, because obviously there's now a push to do something. I don't know, maybe we hop in a DeLorean or something. I'm not sure. But, that's one of the references I thought of, and just kind of go back.
It's my speculation. I think that's what Mike Boyer wanted all along with this.
And that could be. And, you know, and the thing is, people talking is a good thing, but it's going to be interesting to see. The hard point is for this group has been in recent years, everybody likes to talk, but not necessarily to each other. And then not just talk. And that's been one of the things I bless the select schools. I know they've come up with ideas, and I know they've thought and come up with some plans, but you have to bring everything together. And it's going to be interesting to see if you can finally have a meeting of the minds. I don't know. There's never going to be a level playing field for anybody. You're always going to have, I think, teams that dominate. Yes, should people who are violate rules, should they be subject to punishment? Absolutely. You know, absolutely. And it's how you get from point A to point B. You know, there's a lot of finger pointing, and, you know, I think a lot of times what happens is people go their separate ways so much that I've always intended from watching the executive committee and other groups within the LHSA, when you have select schools and non-select schools get together, or principals or whatever, what they find out is some of the things that they go through are more alike than different. And there are similarities. Yes, there are differences, certainly. There are huge differences. But, you know, it's trying to get past that, and that's one of the things that everybody wants to remind you. You're trying to teach your kids that you have to deal with adversity, and you have to deal with diversity. You need to meet all kinds of people and compete against everyone. You know, it's people talk about watered down competition. That's another thing, but, you know, gosh, there's so much that goes into this, especially if you're talking about having the select events all over the state. And, you know, they've talked about vendors and other people in theory, in order to try to give these events what a championship feel, you know, can you get a photographer there to take pictures?
Right.
What's going to be the likelihood of somebody there to sell T-shirts, or what's going, you know, what does that look like? What does that piece look like? You know, and that's a tough one. I don't know that. Yes, that was the way in some sports going back, you know, before the 70s. But again, you look at the Prep Classic. The Prep Classic goes all the way back to 81.
Robin, I hate to do this. We got a hard break coming up. But thank you so much for the report from Baton Rouge. I look forward to seeing you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Robin Fambro with The Advocate. And I can tell you this, a note of local interest as we hit our final break of the program. LCA was one of nine schools that did have an appealed ruling in closed session. According to Robin's report, Eddie Bonine said decisions will be announced in those appeals later this week. So keep an ear out on Trev Falk. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be back on 103.7 The Game.